Hello and welcome to Inside Education, the program and podcast for teachers, policymakers, and anyone with an interest in teaching and learning. I'm Sean Delaney, and you can download podcasts of 300 previous editions of Inside Education by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. The Literacy Association of Ireland held its 41st annual conference earlier this month in the Merino Institute of Education in Dublin. The theme of the conference was Perspectives on Literacy, Bringing Voices Together. One of the keynote addresses at the conference was given by PJ Lynch, who is the Children's Laureate, as well as being an award-winning illustrator and author. He won the Kate Greenway Medal twice, for The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey and for When Jessie Comes Across the Sea. In May 2016, President Michael D. Higgins announced PJ Lynch as the fourth Laureate na nOg, Ireland's greatest honour in children's literature. We spoke the day after PJ Lynch gave his keynote presentation to the Literacy Association of Ireland, and I began the interview by asking him what his main message was to the educators who were present.
Well, the theme was to do with perspectives on literacy, and I, being a visual artist, I kind of homed in on that part of it, the perspectives. So it was a really interesting way into the whole notion for me to come at it from a visual perspective and then to start talking about perspectives as a metaphorical thing, like the way people see the world. And I'm very interested in the whole idea that my perspective is slightly different from your perspective. You know, the way people see things slightly differently, witnesses to an accident always report things slightly differently. So I think it's really important to take on board that different people have different perspectives. I think books are really important in this respect for children. Young children, for the first time, start to understand that other people have a point of view that's different from theirs. So when you're showing a little child a book, it might be about a bunny having a little adventure. For the first time, that child is seeing through someone else's eyes. It's through the bunny's eyes or the teddy's eyes or something like that. And that's a really important process. It's the start of children learning about empathy. So that's what I was banging on about last night. It went really well. I had terrific feedback from the guys. I think a lot of them agreed with a lot of the points I was making. And as I say, I was coming from the visual artist's point of view. So I was talking about my experience with perspective as a visual device and how I use it in my illustrations. And I think people enjoyed that technical side of things as well.
Before we go on to how you use it in your illustrations, could you give an example of some of the perspectives you imagine people bring to literacy and to learning and teaching literacy?
I suppose perspectives in literacy that I would be most familiar with would be different writers and how they bring different perspectives to their readers through maybe in some ways an unusual kind of narrator in their stories. I love when an author takes a sort of unorthodox hero or heroine, someone who might not be immediately sympathetic. So that's more interesting for the older books. I was talking about the teddies and the baby books at the first place. And I suppose my kind of fairy tale work would come somewhere in between. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in young adult work. Louise O'Neill wrote a great book last year that got a lot of attention called Asking For It. And what was really interesting about Louise's book was that her heroine was pretty unsympathetic. She was a bit of a mean girl, you know, and that's what I'm talking about. Someone who's taking a perspective that is so different from your own. You know, I'm a man in my 50s, and yet I was seeing life from a young girl's point of view, and all the social media, all the partying, all the drinking, all that kind of stuff. And then you're invited into her world, and you're invited to see the trials and tribulations that she has to go through. So that's one example. Different authors who might be coming from different cultures in the first place, like, you know, different countries. It's so interesting to read about them and to hear about their experiences and how they see the world. That's what I was trying to get at, I think.
So I think what you're saying then is that it's important for teachers to select very carefully the kinds of literature that they present to children and to consider the perspectives that
that those literary works are bringing to the children. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the most important thing when teachers are selecting books to for their children to work with is that they get something that the kids really want to read. I was talking to a teacher last night who was having, you know, hands up all the boys and what you've been reading recently, and they hadn't read a book for months. Something really bad was going on. I think they were spending all their time on their phones looking at YouTube stuff, which is what my guys do, unfortunately. And she lured them back in by getting them books about what they were interested in. It was football, mostly in this case. So the kids started to get enthusiastic about reading again. I suppose each teacher has to look at where their kids are. You might have some children who are really enthusiastic readers and you want to bring them on with something a bit more sophisticated. But it might be an adventure book, a really great page-turning book. You know, I really don't mind what people read as long as they're reading and as long as they're getting absorbed into books. And teachers know best. They really do know their audience, their children.
And it's interesting that the one you select that you mentioned there is football, and it's non-fiction, whereas you probably do more work in the area of fiction.
I know there'd be lots of fiction books about football. In fact, the one that I was talking about last night with the teacher, she was telling me about it. It was a fictional story. It was about a boy wanting to get on the team at school, that kind of stuff. And there's quite a bit of fiction like that, really. And then you'd also get stuff like, I don't know, footballers' autobiographies, that stuff that gets kids drawn in. I really don't mind what they're reading too much. The key is to get kids starting to read. And there are a lot of authors, especially Irish authors, who are writing stuff for teenagers. And that's a kind of a difficult period at this time because kids are giving up books at that stage. But there's a lot of great adventure stuff and a great fantasy stuff. People like Derek Landy. Owen Colfer is probably the king of all those guys. He's a brilliant author. Maybe for slightly younger people, E.R. Murray. Matt Griffin, who's a terrific young author, who won a prize last night. So that there are an awful lot of people writing in that fantasy adventure area. And these books are often steeped in Irish culture and Irish lore. And that's brilliant. Kids can really get a hook on that very quickly because some of them would be set near where they live. And so I think that's really good. Myself, for other kids, might be a bit like me, interested in history. Nicola Pierce's books on Irish history are absolutely brilliant. Again, if you've got a child in your classroom who you sense might go down that route, the books are there. You know, Nicola Pierce is a great starting point for that.
You were using the term perspective last night metaphorically, but of course most people know you best as an illustrator of children's books. How did you become interested in illustration?
Well, I was just interested in drawing, I suppose, when I was a young fella. I mean, my mum says I was just drawing from the age of two, and that was my thing. So when I went to school, secondary school, I had a couple of really good teachers who introduced me to people like, I knew a bit about Leonardo, but we studied a bit deeper and they taught me the rules of perspective, which it was lovely to start talking about it again last night and to talk about Brunelleschi, who formulated those rules. I use them a certain amount, but it's nice to break those rules and heighten perspective. I've often done that where I'm presenting a view of a scene and maybe there's not much going on, you can always heighten it by twisting the perspective or looking from an angle high above or far below. So I often like to do that to, I don't know, sometimes when I started doing it, it was a way of showing off that I could do it, you know, because I love drawing these perspective things. But it really does bring the viewer right into the picture. So it's a good technique for young illustrators to use.
And when you go about illustrating a book, where do you begin?
Well, you always begin with the text. The story has to draw me in. The story has to be really good for me to spend a year illustrating it.
A year?
Usually a year, sometimes more than a year. And about 8 years ago, I started writing the first book that I've written and illustrated myself. So in that case, I started doing lots and lots of historical research. the normal or more usual situation would be that I get sent a story by my publisher and they say, we'd love you to illustrate this. And usually they sent me amazing stories. Sometimes I have to say yes or no, but often it's yes. And I keep going back to the story. I draw my way through it and then I home in on certain areas that are definitely going to be illustrated. And I keep going back to the text, keep rereading it. And it's funny, each time you reread it, you see another detail, just a little bit of a sentence that might be a key to an illustration.
And some of these texts could be very short because they're picture books for children. And there might only be maybe 1,000 words.
Yeah, 1,000 words. Most of my ones would be a wee bit longer, maybe 2,000 words. But yes, that's the challenge for people writing for children, is to get it all into a very short number of words. And not a lot of people can do it. I get sent an awful lot of stories by people who want to be children's authors. And they all make the same mistake. And I made it myself when I started writing my first book. We all write too much. You have to be really strict at editing yourself, cutting it right back. Some of my friends write novels for adults and they have the luxury of 50,000 or 60,000 words. They can go into every little detail, but you can't do that with a book for children. So you have to be very, very selective and a very strict editor with yourself.
And when somebody sends you a book and asks you to illustrate it, how do you decide whether you're going to say yes or no?
Well, if the story grabs me, if I love the story, then I'm going to work on it. It's usually a really easy choice, you know. The story just, I love it and I'm on the phone straight away, you know, I want to do this. Rarely would I have to think twice about it. It's either a yes or a no.
And when we read quality literature, our enjoyment of it can be enhanced by being aware of metaphor or alliteration or puns or things like that. What's involved in reading or getting the most from quality illustrations in a text?
Well, I think like when you're reading a text, I think it should be happening to you without you really being aware of it. I think if you're aware that there's some clever wordplay going on or alliteration or something, then that's a bit clunky. I think it should just be flowing. And likewise with the illustrations, you shouldn't have to think it through too much. It should just happen to you. You look at the picture and it works. Your eye is drawn to a particular part of the picture. You notice certain details. A good illustrator will have planned all of that before you come to the book. So you turn the page and you see what that illustrator wants you to see. And ideally, with books for children, they benefit from being reread many times. Ideally, there will be lots of different details for the child to go back and see different things the second and third and fourth and 50th time they read the book.
So what can a teacher do to help children to look more closely and more carefully and to appreciate the illustrations in a book?
Sometimes when I talk to teachers and librarians, a lot of people feel, look, we know understand words, but we don't understand pictures. We don't really know what's going on here. And I think there's a certain amount of research you could do, but probably the easiest thing to do is to throw it open to the kids, to maybe have... if you could project the images from the book, that would be ideal. But you can just hold the book up and have a look at it and say to the children, what's going on in these pictures? And get the kids to look closely at it. And they will tell you what the illustrator is doing. I think that might be a good way around it for the teachers. And they might discover some stuff that the kids' eyes will home in on that the teachers may not have even thought of.
What kind of layers then are in an illustration? Like, I mean, the one I immediately think of is, say, Anthony Brown, and you know how he has certain things. But not all illustrators are as obvious maybe as him in terms of what layers might be hidden beneath the first glance.
Yeah, Anthony's a very good example, a great illustrator, and he works in different ways. Hopefully the parents will get something out of his books. They'll get references that the children won't, and the kids will follow it in a more simplistic. They'll see the fun element of just like a dad who looks like a chimpanzee or a gorilla coming to school, and they'll think it's funny. But there's lots of other pop culture references in there that parents will get. So yeah, you're right. Some illustrators don't work in that way. They're much more simplistic and direct, but then there are others who have multiple layers. And I'm not sure where I fall. I think I like to put in plenty of references, art world references that are there, and historical references and things like that. But if you're a successful illustrator working for a particular age group, that shows that it works, you know, the fact that people like the books and come back to them again and again. They're kind of working in their own way. But I think for very young readers, the best books are the ones that work for the parents and for the child. I know from my experience when I was reading to our kids, it was great when you had a funny narrator. Mo Willems was one of our favourites because the kids got them on a very simplistic level. And the parents were getting all sorts of different gags going on there. So I think that's perfect for early readers. As you move on a bit, then parents and children will understand much more together, I suppose. It's always a shame then when the parents stop reading the books with the kids and the kids feel they have to move on to books that don't have pictures in it. I think that's really sad. One good thing in the last 20 odd years is that there have been a lot of graphic novels, and they have achieved a kind of centrality in the culture that, whereas it used to be sort of embarrassing to be reading graphic novels, and you could get slagged at school for it. Oh, you're still reading comic books. But everybody reads them nowadays, and I think that's a really, really important development.
Who are your own favourite illustrators of children's texts in particular, although not necessarily just children's?
I have some favourites from many years ago. There's an Austrian illustrator called Lisbeth Zwerger, and she does very, very beautiful work. She would be one of my favourites. There's a guy called Sandy Turner who does very beautiful books. There's a lot of great Irish illustrators working at the minute. I'm really fond of Oliver Jeffers' work, and Chris Houghton's brilliant illustrator. Friends of mine who are also happen to be brilliant illustrators, people like Niamh Sharkey and Mary Louise Fitzpatrick, they'd be big favourites of mine. We're spoiled for choice. There are so many great illustrated books around. It's just amazing at the minute.
And if you were to think back to when you were in primary school or post-primary school yourself, and, you know, I don't know whether that early you knew you wanted to be an illustrator, but if there's, say, an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old who kind of would be interested in this direction, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, it's funny because when I was that age, I just accepted that the pictures were in the books. I did not think, how did those pictures get into the books? I did not think about someone drawing them. I like to show kids that people are drawing these pictures and that's how they end up. So kids these days are a lot more clued in than I was. So they know that there's someone illustrating, someone doing drawings. My advice to young artists who want to be illustrators is to get on with it, not be waiting. I had this terrible attitude, like, I have to learn how to do this, I have to go to art college, and then I have to do something, and in the future I'll be an illustrator. But I think with the kind of computers we've got, you can make up a dummy, you can do a drawing, you can get into animation. Kids should get on with it and produce the best possible stuff they can immediately and start pestering publishers with it. Send them off, you know. They'll at least get encouragement and they might get accepted. So don't be like me. Don't be waiting for ages before you get yourselves published.
So a book arrives on your desk today and it's going to be a year before you'll have the illustrations done. What happens during that year?
Well, there's an awful lot of hard work goes into each book. There'll be a lot of research at the start, a few months of reading about the subject, doing a lot of visual research, maybe working with models sometimes.
So, you say models, do you
well,
mean?
Well, I get people dressing up as characters in the books. Sometimes when I'm doing books that require a level of authenticity, I did a book about the Mayflower and the costumes had to be all exactly right. I went to the Abbey's costume depository up in Finglas and I got a lot of costumes and I had actors acting the scenes out. Sometimes I go to those lengths. After I do a book like that, it's always a great relief to do a fun book where I just make everything up. That's what I'm doing at the minute. I'm doing more of a fantasy book at the minute. So during the year, there'll be a lot of drawing. The first phase is research. The second phase is a lot of drawing. And the third phase then will be all the painting. So it's a slow old process.
And would there be many drafts of the drawings?
Yeah. In fact, I was showing the guys last night some examples of how far I take a drawing, and then I realised this just isn't working, and then I got to start again. You kind of always know when it's not really working. So somewhere deep down, there's a little voice saying, come on, scrap it and start again. And finally, I listen to it, and the second picture generally comes out maybe a bit better. So there would be maybe two or three drafts of a picture before I get it right.
And you said that you've started, or you've written one book yourself. How is that different to illustrating someone else's book?
I have written stories before, but I sort of chickened out from getting them published. What usually happened was my publisher said, yeah, that's okay, we'll do that. But then they sent me a brilliant story that I'd want to illustrate. So I put the other thing on the back burner. Yeah, I picked a really difficult subject for my first book, which was about the Mayflower. So that in America, there are hundreds and hundreds of books about the Mayflower. But I had discovered one particular passenger who actually fell off the Mayflower, but was saved. And I thought, that guy, that's so interesting. And I investigated and I found out more about him. So I did an awful lot of research, and I read books and books and books. And I found out that he survived the journey across. He survived the first terrible winter when half of them died. And he got married to one of the other passengers, and they had 10 children. They had 88 grandchildren. They have 10 million descendants still alive today. So I was thinking, if each of those descendants just bought one copy of my book, I'd be really happy.
And it's done very well.
It's done really well.
It's called The Boy Who Fell Off the Mayflower.
The Boy Who Fell Off the Mayflower. And any time I'm in America promoting the book, in the audience, there's always at least one person who's descended directly from those people. And that's just incredible.
What does it mean to be Laureate na nOg, PJ?
It's a great honour to have been named Laureate na nOg in the first place. I suppose it's given to people who've been around for a certain amount of time and have stayed the course, so I'm very pleased about that. So that's one side of it that I'm hugely grateful for. The second side of it is that I get to be the ambassador for children's literature. One aspect is I get to go around Ireland and abroad talking about how wonderful Irish children's literature is, and that's a great pleasure. And the other side of it is I try to reach as many of our own children here and to encourage them to get into reading. And I think that's more crucial now than ever, because they have more distractions. When I was a kid, there were two channels on the TV and not much else to do, maybe play football. But if it was a wet day, what would you be doing? You'd be reading a book. These days, they have hundreds of other distractions. Luckily, we've got great books going on. We've got great writers in Ireland and great illustrators. And I just want to connect the two together. So we've been doing a lot of events where, as an illustrator, I've been homing in on the visual side of it. One thing we've been doing is these big pictures where I've been going around the country doing huge big drawings, and the kids get to watch me drawing. I sort of do a bit of demonstrating. They get stuck in. They start drawing with me, and it becomes a really collaborative process. And you might have a dozen people working on the picture at any one time. And that's also about storytelling, because then we'd be talking about what the children are doing with the picture and what the picture needs to make it work a little bit better. And they're great for that. They, you know, they come up with really imaginative solutions. And when I start these big pictures, I try to plan them and direct them. But you just have no idea which direction they're going to go off, and the kids make it their own. And we all have a lot of fun, and we get really dirty, and it's brilliant crack.
We're coming near the end, PJ. Who or what inspires you?
Children inspire me. I'm very lucky. I have three wonderful children, and they really do inspire me. I was thinking back to when they were little, and I wished I had somehow produced lots of brilliant baby books back then. I was inspired by the kids, but I think I was too exhausted, myself and my wife being up all night, that we couldn't translate it into brilliant baby books. So children are the primary inspiration. As an illustrator, I love it when a writer comes up with a really amazing story. That's what gets my sort of my juices flowing with regards to illustrating. I've been working with Owen Colfer recently, and there's no better storyteller in the world today. Just he really has an amazing just ability with words. Dialogue is wonderful, and I'm so pleased that I'm working on a book with Owen at the minute. So those are the things that inspire me. Great storytellers and kids.
Have you seen the film Goodbye Christopher Robin about A.A. Milne?
No, I haven't seen it. Is it good? Is it a good story?
Well, it's just when you say about drawing for your own children and illustrating for your own children. A.A. Milne wrote the book for his boy, but Christopher Robin ended up hating them to such an extent that he was bullied in school, and he accepted no money for the books after his father had died.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So,
that might make me a bit sad. I don't think I'm going to see that. I know other children of famous authors, Kenneth Graham's son, I think, had a pretty bad time as well. Have you read Gone Girl?
No.
It's a great book. And there's a sort of psychopathic heroine at the centre of it. And her parents had created this character called Amazing Amy, based on their daughter. So Amazing Amy in the books was this wonderful, fun kid. And in real life, the poor kid couldn't live up to it. You got to read the book. It's wonderful.
Finally, PJ, if there was one message you wanted the educators to take from your keynote address at the Literacy Association of Ireland conference, what would it be?
I wouldn't presume to tell people who are working very hard educating how to do their job, because they know much better than me. What I would like them to go away with is this whole enthusiasm for books, for loving pictures and loving stories. And it's all about reading for the enjoyment of it. I think when I was a child, I used to read because I had to. I was given set books and I couldn't wait to put them down. If you can introduce children to books that they love, that can hook them, maybe a series of books, that's what it's all about. Getting kids to be addicted to books, to have that habit, because it's far better than the habit of being addicted to their phones, you know. So I would just say to all the teachers out there, find the key book that's going to bring that child into a whole lifetime as a reader. That's their challenge for them.
And that really is the challenge for all teachers of English, as expressed by Children's Laureate, author and illustrator PJ Lynch, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. To download over 300 Inside Education podcasts, go to seandelaney.com. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from all good bookshops and libraries. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.